What's up, guys? It's Devin here, and I want to sneak in here real quick to let you guys know this episode is brought to you by Fuel Lab. The boys and I have been using the brushless pumps in our Tymotec Evo and S2000 for some years now with fantastic results. They just released their new quick service surge tank. This thing allows you to be able to remove your fuel pump out of your fuel cell in roughly 5 minutes. If you're like us and need to be able to diagnose problems quickly in between rounds and sessions, this is a killer solution. So on behalf of the boys, head on over to Fuel Lab. That's with 1L. And for a special discount, hit in Tyrone at checkout. And of course, you're welcome.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Hypercritical Radio by Professional Awesome, because I'm not reading off the paper in front of me. And I am joined by
Mike Lewin,
Devin, feeling good, Giles,
Dan, glad that Devin's feeling good, O'Donnell.
And I don't think I said my name. I'm Hayden Lowe, but I think y'all know that. But we're joined by
Shay Seafelt. Glad to be here, guys.
Thanks for being on.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've actually listened quite a bit to your guys' podcast in the past. It's pretty entertaining, so yeah, looking forward to it.
More people wasting time. That's good news.
yeah.
Keep using up the Earth's bandwidth on our conversations. That's always good news. Shay.
I always find it entertaining, so yeah.
Good, good. So Shay, if you'd like, could you tell us a little bit, just give us a little introduction of who you are, why somebody might know you or not know you, even if it's just one individual, and we'll go on from there.
Ooh, okay. Well, I think most people would probably have met me in some form of motorsports, mostly probably people over the age of 50, because I spent most of my time in the SCCA. Beyond that,
that's a good way to start right there.
Yeah.
The older crowd.
Exactly. Yeah. The more refined crowd, some might say.
Seasoned folk.
Exactly. But before that, actually, I didn't truly get into motorsports until probably a decade ago. So, but up until this point, I did compete, quote unquote, compete regionally in the SCCA autocross. And then over the last couple of years, I've gotten lucky enough to be on some of Motor Trend's TV shows here and there. Mostly Runs Good. That's probably where the mass majority of people might have, you know, heard of me before.
So you're telling me if we autocross, we end up on TV?
Ooh, probably not. In fact, I never even got looked at until I quit autocross, sadly enough.
Okay, good, good.
Well, I think good. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, we quit that autocross years ago.
Yeah, fuck autocross with bitches.
Whatever. I don't mind autocross. I mean, I mind the working part. God, I'm not paying and then working and then driving for 15 seconds and then working. No, I'm sorry. I'm just not that person. Other people might enjoy that, but no.
Totally get it. I was really, I'll call it a cult, right? It's like I was in it.
Yeah.
I traveled. I was one of the few that traveled to Lincoln, Nebraska once a year. You know, it's like a 13-hour drive, I think, from here to compete for 3 minutes. So, yeah, I was deep in it.
I mean, I guess I think I probably understand it a little bit more than these guys do, or at least will accept it a little bit more than these guys do. Because I
That's
still
a better way to put it.
There you go. I'm known for my acceptance, let me tell you. I might accept it a little bit more, but, yeah, I don't get it from a – you know, long-term standpoint in terms of wanting to go pay, then work the course. It's just painful.
No, you're actually right on point. If you look at the younger generation that does get involved with whether it's PCA or SCCA autocross, they usually come a handful of times and then really never come back. So they have a really low retention. A lot of it is the pay and work / play, you know, scheme that they use. So,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's not a lot of time. Anyway, this doesn't need to be a conversation about pro solo because, you know, got to make it sound cooler than it is. Anyway, don't send angry comments. I mean, I don't care. Send angry comments. More comments, the better. But you mentioned, obviously, that you found your way accidentally or on purpose into the Motor Trend world, the universe. I'm sure people would be very interested to understand, you know, how that happened. If there is a little bit of background leading up to that, feel free to tell us a little bit about that. But yeah, I'm sure that's going to be the number one question.
Yeah. So it's not so cut and dry, but most of it is purely by luck, honestly, being in the right place at the right time. I've had a pretty good friendship with Dan Brockett, who's one of the other hosts on Runs Good. He also lives here in Albuquerque. He runs every Drift event, and a really a major large one called No Coast. Play on words there, since we don't have a coast like East Coast or West Coast. But I've met him for, it was back in 2006, something like that. And we've kind of been friends ever since. He is involved in various stunt driving and has a history of dealing with, you know, media companies and TV companies. And he befriended the group Donut, the YouTube group. And through just exchange of meeting certain people, we got in touch with some quote unquote talent, like researchers. And we got invited to be on a show called Hoopty World Championship, which was, I think it was something that was created right as COVID hit. I think it was 2020. And it was an idea of just getting a bunch of people together with a low budget car and really sitting back and making fun of us most of the time. That was, I think, the actual goal.
Say that name again. Hoopty what?
Hoopty World Championship. So.
And it caused COVID. That's what I understand.
Caused COVID? it was created during COVID, I think, is when. As a brain chill. Yeah, I mean, maybe it did cause a little bit of COVID. Now that I think about it, maybe it did. No, there was really strict times back then. But so, and that entire show was a pretty big operation. But ultimately, apparently, it was some type of talent search as well. And we went on that show, did relatively well. I would say there's some things that we, you know, kind of did pretty poorly at. But overall, that was our window into it. And they approached Dan after that and wanted to put together a show and asked him, you know, what we wanted to do and who we wanted to bring along. And that's kind of where Aaron Parker got involved. And then I was brought in as, you know, the kind of well-rounded mechanic in some ways. And then we did a pilot. And it was pretty terrible, but surprisingly, they brought us on for an actual show. And this particular season was, yeah, it was difficult, but overall, I think accomplished what we set out to do with a relatively small budget. And the rest is kind of history, as they say.
Awesome.
When you say difficulties, like what stuff happens that makes that production difficult?
I would say normally most production is pretty difficult as it is, but when it comes to the time, you guys probably have a lot to relate to this. If you were trying to find used parts or even performance parts during the last 2.5 years, it's impossible to get certain parts in a timely manner. And, you know, when the movie industry is trying to accomplish something, you know, they don't have a lot of time, or they typically don't give themselves a ton of time. So it was challenging on finding the right parts, acquiring them. Sometimes modifying certain parts and then still having a meaningful story to tell at the end of it. That was probably the most challenging part of just being a part of the entire series, was coming up with ideas, concepts, and then finding cars that were compelling and then modifying them in ways that were exciting and somewhat original.
And I guess we'll take a step back. So what's like the general concept of Runs Good and for people that haven't seen it before?
I would say to just Runs Good is it was inspired by our love of motorsports and automotive communities. Really, not enough of that stuff is being, I would say, organized as much as we would hope it be. So we're lots of tracks are closing, that kind of stuff. So we wanted to inspire people to take on projects and participate in the local car communities, whether it was motorsports or just car shows in general. So the concept grew from there, and it's kind of evolved into, we are somewhat rescuing these stalled project cars from their owners in some ways.
Okay, I feel a little personally attacked there, but I get it.
I was going to say, so are you guys going to be knocking on each one of our doors individually right now?
Mm-hmm.
I could say that if someone came to my door wanting to buy my project car from Motor Trend, I would probably think twice about it.
You're going to be the one working on it? So can you buy your own car and then fix it and then have the show do it?
No, I think that's frowned upon a little bit. So the projects, they do have to meet quite a criteria, and it does make a big deal as far as, I think it comes out better when we follow a certain criteria of, is it compelling? Is it unique? Or are we just accomplishing repairing our own cars on the side? Like it's challenging actually to just point at a car and be like, hey, let's take this to the track and follow certain guidelines to make a compelling story. And in some episodes, I think we accomplished it much better than others. But yeah, it was a growing process, and yeah, so far I think we're just getting our heads on straight when it comes to the process, and we're starting to work together with each other. So the show, it's gotten a lot better, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it can't start perfect. It's not going to start perfect, right? So you got to get in that groove. So out of
curiosity for the history and everything, obviously you said that the Hoopty World Challenge and all that. And that was local. Was that local to you? And then are you shooting this new show local to you? Is that how all that's working, or how does that all production kind of play out?
It's a pretty big animal, production in general. So it doesn't necessarily have to be local to me, which is Albuquerque, New Mexico. In fact, there was one of my favorite episodes was when we were traveling all over Colorado as well as New Mexico. But the Hoopty World Championship was actually filmed in Tucson, Arizona, at this pretty large, I don't really know what to call it. It's like a convention center / community activity center in some way. So they had lots of open areas, and then they had a carnival on site at that exact moment. So it was kind of interesting. But overall, some productions are monsters. You can have, you know, hundreds of people, and some of them are small. Most of the time, like our production was relatively small in that scale. We only had about six people beyond Aaron and Dan and myself.
Sure. Like I was looking at I just found some pictures. It looks like it's at a fairgrounds.
Yeah, that's probably the right word for it.
Yeah, I'm going to go find that show. I don't know how I missed that. Looks interesting.
It is. I think the cars were really cool. Everyone brought a wide variety of cars. And the concept was, you know, $5,000 or less. And then we had a budget. I don't remember what the budget was now off the top of my head, but once we arrived, that we could improve on the car and also do repairs. So, and then the rule book was pretty loose, and we kind of pushed the boundaries on what we thought those rules meant and the interpretation of it. And one specific team more than others, I'm not going to call it out, but if you watch the show, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. They stretched that rule pretty, pretty far, but it was actually a ton of fun. The story of it, I don't even know if it really has a story. The group of people that we filmed with were really great. Everyone, the cars were unique and different. They all had their own interesting aspects, but ultimately it was mostly just six teams beating the crap out of these mostly junker cars. I would say that.
Very cool. I mean, go ahead, Dan.
That's just what your goal in life is to do, Mike, is to get rich enough just to buy cars to beat the shit out of them.
That's right. That's like,
that's God, your whole Mirage those situation. Oh.
The Mirage, yes, still need the Mirages.
Still the cheapest car around, still need them. Anyway, after you did that and you started rolling into the Motor Trend side of things,
I'm curious. Personally, I'm curious. Like you said that, you know, there's criteria and everything for the projects and all that. Is that mostly like, are you guys coming up with all the ideas, coming up with all the cars, doing all the research and all that? Or is like,
on these car shows, it always seems like, it's hard to tell if there's a background, you know, like help for that kind of thing, or if it's just literally you doing all this work and then they're just kind of occasionally filming things when it gets a little bit more exciting.
I would say that Motor Trend is pretty unique. Even though I haven't worked for really any other production company, they really pride themselves on not being scripted. And that's absolutely the truth. And it goes beyond just what's on TV. They really allow us to work with a group of people and pick the cars we want and the projects we want. There are some that are kind of guiding us as far as, hey, it'd be nice if you did something that was a American Muscle versus a, you know, import. But for the most part, we do get a really large say in what we want to do. And there are some challenges with three different people. Aaron and Dan and myself obviously have different perspectives, but we align most of the time on 90% of the things. So We literally have meetings where we sit down and cruise Craigslist and Facebook, and we're like, hey, this is a good car. We think we could do a cool story with this. And as far as we don't sit down and make a script and, you know, fabricate drama into things, everything that you see is more or less absolutely real. And it happens just in general when you're working on project cars. You don't have to make up drama, as you guys know, on project cars. It's going to be there.
So you're saying if you don't finish the car, you won't lose your shop?
Yeah. Believe it or not, yes, that is absolutely the truth. We unfortunately, though, it means we have to come back and continue to work on it. And we're pretty straightforward in the series about not being able to fix something or not having the right part, because a lot of these projects are kind of like, we're like, hey, if all of these things, like if you looked at a Gantt chart of these parts arrive here and if they work, we have a successful episode. And there's a lot of opportunity to not progress the build because the part that we thought we could modify and get to work just isn't going to work. So, and it happened, I want to say it happened 2 or 3 times in the 6 episodes that we had. So it's pretty tough when it comes to that.
I have a very important question that I think needs to be answered for everyone here. Which search platform, like Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, yields the best project car results from your experience as a professional? Where are you finding the best, most interesting ones?
You're an expert now.
I can see right now you guys are going to have in the for sale ad, like Motor Trend, please buy this, because ultimately...
No,
we use Facebook Market. We use them all: Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist. I would be lying if I said that the majority of our vehicles were not found. We found them all on Facebook Marketplace, for more or less.
Ooh, that hurts.
So I know it's terrible.
I think that Craigslist is a place to search. Well, somebody A has to put like $5 up to post it, or now whatever the cost is. Yeah,
they're serious about it,
and that's where all like the 55-year-olds who are just a little bit too old for Facebook Marketplace, they don't realize the cars have gone up in price and value. I just think that's where the deals are, but maybe I'll be proven wrong.
I think you're right. We were mostly shooting for, you know, 90s import cars. So when we go on Craigslist, we would find a lot of project cars, but they ended up being more classic. And if you look at the Motor Trend lineup, there's plenty of shows out there doing American muscle car related content. So trying to, at least I felt, this might be one-sided, but I felt like it was very difficult to do a TV show with JD import cars in that 90s realm. Because one, they have quite a few problems. And two, their parts are somewhat hard to find and they're troublesome to diagnose. So it was a challenge. But yeah, if I had to say... I'm looking at where I found the most cars. It was definitely, unfortunately, Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah. And I feel like everyone there always is like, I know what I've got. Mm-hmm. You know, my
240 is $53,000.
Exactly. So, I know.
It's not completely fucked, but it is. We promise.
I think if you watch the show, you would still believe that Facebook Marketplace is overpriced, because I think we got hosed on like 90% of the projects we bought. They were all pretty overpriced and they were all pretty bad. So yeah, I would not recommend anyone buying a project car on Facebook, but we did find the most volume of project cars.
Oh, okay. That clarifies. That helps. It makes you feel a little better.
So out of the first season here of this show,
what was your favorite car? What was your favorite?
Oh, that's
to
tough.
Fix some things.
I would say just off the cuff, right off the bat, the Mustang was my favorite to fix. And that's, yeah, if you watch it, it's episode 1. If you watch it, it was terrible. It was, we wanted to get an easy one in the back. We were literally like, let's buy a running car or like super close to it. And let's go do something simple like drag racing. And we were like, sweet, cool. We had a,
I appreciate that you said something simple like drag racing, just to shit on Devin. I mean, yes. I know that it was intentional to shit on Devin. You just, it's cool. We're cool. It's awesome. Well, I appreciate
that's
it.
What it is.
Yeah. we didn't do so well. So I'll give you credit. It was harder, you know, harder to do than what we set out to.
But you heard that, Mike? It was fucking harder to do than you thought.
Wow.
Yeah. So eat a dick, old man.
Right. Yeah. When the expectation is that they were going to take a hoopty off of fucking Facebook Marketplace that was already almost running and then make it into a drag car, and it was slightly harder. What we're talking, like 1% to 3%, like whatever.
Mm, I mean,
and I'll be completely honest, like when we bought that particular car, we were trying to, so since we actually have a budget, we can't really go beyond that. It's pretty strict. So we were trying to wheel and deal, right? This car was not the greatest condition. However, it had a 5.3 in it, right? An LS 5.3, and had a relatively cheap single turbo kit on it. We didn't really want that motor in it. It was a Fox body, but we actually had purchased a 2J already to put into it. We wanted to kind of somewhat make a splash and piss off some of Motor Trend's like current, you know, subscribers. But when it came down to it, it was just easier from a time frame perspective to continue with that LS swapped turbo 5.3. And I don't want to give too much away from it, but it had everything that we touched had a problem. And it came down to a point where I was too afraid to remove a part to see what else could be messed up. So we kind of stopped and just put it back together. And
hope for the best. Right?
In there.
Yeah. You just hope it's okay.
How long does the car really need to last for, right? Like,
right.
How many passes do you need to make before you throw it away?
It doesn't need to be perfect. And that's one of the biggest challenges I have. I would take it all apart. It'd be ruined and then it'd sit in pieces for 10 years.
We actually touch on that exact topic. We thought this one was going to be like, okay, wash our hands. We're only going to have 5 episodes this season. Like, let's forget this one ever existed. But the reason why it kind of resonates with me so much is that so many things had to come together. It was our first episode. Every team member, every host at least, and actually some of the production team kind of band together to get the car to work. There was just problem after problem, but we eventually got to take it to the racetrack. We didn't get what we had hoped, but we definitely had a lot of fun with it. And at the end, it ended up being one of the more reliable cars that we had on the show. We actually drove it to and from the racetrack, and yeah, it ended up being really cool. I've never been a turbo LS fan, but after that, I really like them, and I've been wanting to do more of them since. So it's not so much the car, more of the journey. But overall, I think that I'd have to sum it up. That's my favorite one out of season one.
So you don't like turbo LSs because it's too common or what?
No, I really don't have a legitimate reason other than I feel like
it's okay. I get it.
We get it here. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's cool.
It's a heavy iron block. Like, and yeah, I guess you can pump out a ton of power with it, but maybe it's the execution that I didn't like about them. Or maybe it was just jealousy deep down. That could have been it.
That jealousy, yeah.
Yeah.
It's possible.
It's fair.
What you said you wanted to put a different motor in it because you wanted to make it a 5-spot. What did you want to put in it?
It was we actually purchased a 2J, 2JZ for it.
I'm confused at how that's different or better than a
because that's LS God's engine. Oh my
God. You get what I'm saying? Like, it kind of like that's like 2J swap is kind of like an LS swap, but.
Okay. You're being ultra disrespectful this episode, right?
I was going to say, just, you're really hurting feelings now.
Like, I don't understand.
In terms of like the motor, like, oh, everyone's like, LS swap it. And then when you go to the JDM side, like, why don't you just 2J swap it? Like, it's that, you know, capital on capital letter typing angrily bullshit. So is that really different? Just JDM version?
It's, in fact, that's one of the justifications we use to not swap it.
Boom. They were thinking it.
It was, well, I wanted to do it. It really came down to engine management, right? We didn't have a harness. We didn't have a PCM or ECU.
Yeah, that would be
expensive. We were going to have to source that stuff. And the time frame was tight. So, yeah. And we wanted to save that for a project further down in the series. So we just ran with the LS. And overall, I think it was probably the right decision. But I think that it wasn't as compelling as a 2J just because you see an old school Fox body making, you know, turbo noises and it doesn't sound like a V8. Like that would have been, I think, the cherry on top.
Yeah, it'd been way, way cooler than a turbo LS.
Yeah.
It would have been too much Tokyo drift style. Like what's the problem here?
It probably would have been a little bit slower maybe, but we'll see. So you guys got to watch it.
Yeah. I want to know what, Mike, what would you put in a Fox body?
I would just
piss off people.
I mean, I'm not going to piss off anybody, but I'm like if I was thinking that it's like, if we're going to go back to Fox body, you're going to make it Fox body. I'm like waiting for him to say like 302 or 351 Windsor. And then maybe like do a little bit like of a, like get the
gross.
Whatever. Anyway,
four block forward, garbage. Throw that shit away.
Yeah. But then I was like, oh, maybe he wants to do something like a 4-valve or maybe even something dumber like a 3-valve. Or maybe I'm really stupid and want a 2-valve and put a turbo through it and just blow everything out of it. I don't know. I was just wondering where we were going here. It's a level of understanding where his head's at in terms of making a decision in the project.
Well, so basically you're calling him dumb for wanting anything fourth. It's not a Coyote. So it's kind of fucked up.
No, I mean, I'm okay with a 351 is fine. That's a fine motor.
Garbage. Garbage.
Well, all right. Moving on. It's a fine motor. It's not amazing. But if you've already got an LS, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. Or we can just piss off the LS people and go with the LS copied everything from Ford thing. That could piss off a few LS people. We could do that. I don't know. Just saying. But a turbo LS isn't bad. I mean,
No, it was great. I just felt like the 2J would have been a little bit more Tokyo Drift. It would have felt a little bit like that.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been, I'm sure that would have been good for the gram, right? I guess, do we have to stay TikTok now? I don't know. I'm like, how old am I? I don't know how old I am.
The future is now, old man.
The future is now, old man. Well, everyone's banning TikTok, so now what do we do? What happens when that gets banned and I can't watch people post stupid videos about nothing until the end that says, wait until the end?
If that happens, you got to get yourself a Motor Trend subscription and watch
there you go.
That's pretty much
the option. That's the only other option. Good plug. Good plug. Cool. I liked it. So,
take tips.
For the premise, I watched a little bit. I'll be honest. I watched a little bit of the Fox Body video, but I ADD'd it, which means that I turned it on. I skipped to 5 minutes in. I watched it was a Fox Body, skipped to 10 minutes in. Watched that you were doing some things to the Fox Body, skipped to 25 minutes in. Watched some people do a couple passes, like try to, you know, right when you were testing it. And you're like, wow, it works. And then looked at the parts in it. And then I turned it off because that's how my ADD works. It has nothing to do with the quality of the show. It's just how my ADD works. So like how much money can you buy the car for? And then how much money can you put into it?
It's kind of loose. Like any budget, you can kind of move stuff around here, there, but sure. We wanted to do these projects.
Have you ever heard of the Grassroots Motorsports, you know, date challenge, the 2020 challenge?
Oh
my gosh.
Oh, really?
Well, go check that out. None of them cars are $2,000. Anyway, moving on.
I'm taking a note down. I'm taking a note. I want to see this.
Kind of like women's, right? How they say it's supposed
to be
$500 with the people just stretch out that rule.
Just stretch it real far. I loved it when you could buy. I loved the rule when it was so aggressive where they're like, you can buy any car for $500, right? You could just buy it for face value. And then it kind of, you know, they kind of went away with that because nobody wants anybody to touch their car. But anyway, how did that budget work?
So we wanted to make sure the projects were relevant and obtainable. So we kept the budget low. Like it was what most people would probably be willing to spend on a project car. And really, if you look at the episodes, we spent anywhere from, I think the cheapest we bought was, I think it was the off-road Subaru that we did. I don't know exactly what, I think it was a Legacy. And I think we bought it for like $3,000 because it already came with a bunch of off-road stuff. And then the episode 6, the Skyline, was by far the most expensive one that we bought right off the bat. And I think we paid a lot for that, like too much. I want to say it was somewhere around like $14,000 or something.
Holy.
So yeah. And it was just it's an R32 GTST with RB20. So that was by far the most expensive one, but we try to keep the budget and the overall parts to be manageable and obtainable. One of them, I would say the off-road Cherokee that we did, the Jeep Cherokee, that one had a lot of, I don't want to say sponsored, but it was freebies. We can call them that, where they had people that are just willing to, you know, give us these parts. And we had some ridiculous shocks that were super expensive. But that's how we were able to kind of thrash it through the desert. If we had to go for things that were more budget friendly, we probably couldn't have done the things that we did do with it. But overall, it's somewhere in that ballpark of we're trying to get a car at the track purchased for around $15,000 or so.
And is there a base goal for after you unfuck it?
Kind of, yeah. It's not to make it worse, right? And some of them we actually
not to make it worse.
We did, yeah. It's. I would say that we're very much about carrying the story and the previous owner's like wishes out with it. So if we have someone who's like, yeah, you know, I wanted to make this into a time attack car or a drift car, but life happened and I had a kid and, you know, it's been stalled for three years. So we try to take that inspiration, put it into the car, and attempt to partake in that activity afterwards. Some of it works out, some of it doesn't.
Of course, the next question is, did you tell anybody to just be like, no, that's a stupid goal?
Yeah, we had one. So not all the projects. We got like...
I'm sorry. Did you die? Because some guys like, I want to do this with like, I want my, like, we're just go right to it. Some guys like, I've always wanted to build like this monster cool, like stanced out, like freaking show car. And I'd be like, you have your money, right? Yep. You signed the title. Cool. Bye, bud. Walk away.
Now this is when we pull out the, I was actually going to use this car for a unibody swap and Mike actually just kills you and then walks away.
Oh my God. We're not doing body swaps.
No joke, I was waiting for someone to say some ridiculous thing. Because a lot of the owners did get filmed. Not a lot of them actually got or made it to an episode, but I had fears that some of them would be like, yeah, I want to put a rocket on this thing and, you know, go to Mars like Elon Musk or something. So, but for most parts, their goals were pretty obtainable.
Did you find any cars when you're like, or talk to any of the owners and be like, wow, that's a really cool idea or whatever? Like they had a pretty cool concept and then you had to try to follow through with that? Or is it mostly just what you wanted to do after that?
For the sake of like getting a coherent story and something down into a manageable 45 minute watch time, we did have to kind of change things up in certain episodes and kind of throw certain wishes to the wayside. But overall, once we achieved the car, or once we got the car in our hands, we were able to kind of do whatever modifications we want as we see fit. And in the end, some of them we didn't really accomplish what the owner had sold it because of. So we did a shop truck that we, it was kind of out of necessity and ended up being one of more my favorite episodes. And from what I understand, I've had more people reach out about that particular episode than any other one. So people seem to like it. And it had no story whatsoever. We were just, let's turn this truck into something cool, something we'd like to drive around.
I was reminded, Mike knows this story, but I don't think Devin or Hayden does, but you're talking about project cars and trying to fulfill, you know, the owner's wishes. And, you know, sometimes life gets in the way. Well, one time I have a buddy, also called Dan, who coming around the time of April Fool's Day had this really sweet Civic Waggle van that was lowered and had it was slammed to the ground. It was a cool looking Civic Waggle van. But I posted that thing on Craigslist without his permission and said that, oh, I got my girl pregnant and I need to get rid of this. And first come, first serve. And I put the price stupid low. And I the one thing I did say was like text only, no calls. But he was working that day and I think he got like 50 text messages. He freaked out. So that's something for people to use out there for the future.
You're a horrible human being.
Oh, it was hilarious. It was a funny day.
It was pretty good. I'm glad that that wasn't me because Dan would be dead.
Does this particular person have too many cars? Is that why you were trying to offload some of his project cars?
No, honestly, he's like my best friend. It was just, yeah, it just popped into my head and I thought he would be able to take a joke. And he honestly didn't really take a joke.
he was working and they called.
Yeah, they went overboard. But still worth it. We're still friends.
Yeah, I got one of those funny jokes too, but I can't mention it at all on this. So that's just too beyond.
This is no. Fair use podcast. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. No, I just, yeah, Craigslist listing jokes that can go pretty
far. Oh,
yeah. Don't get shot or anything.
Yeah.
So, obviously to me, like that show sounds exactly like what we do normally is we look at all these projects on Facebook and like, oh yeah, we got to unfuck that. We can unfuck this. We can unfuck that. But taking someone else's project car and trying to make it better is just like terrifying to me. Like I just want to rip everything out and then having to do it under the gun, just not fun. Like Dan's like over here, he bought an S2000 and then tried to make it nice, which he did a good job making it nice. And then bought an Evo 10, which wasn't bad, but made it nicer. And it's all those same things, but it's like takes forever to get it to be remotely even reasonable.
I bought two S2000s, Mike, remember? Because the first one was too bad.
Yeah, that's true.
The exact same year, color.
Two cheapest ones in the United States that he could find to do it. And then we made.
It's actually a YouTube video on Unprofessional Awesome, at least the first part of that.
Oh, check it out.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it has decent, you know, production value. And Dan tried really hard to make it nice and film good parts of it. And it had, you know, the whole backstory and all of that. But it was like, we talk about this all the time, like looking at projects like that car would take this much money and we can make it so much better if we just have a little bit of time. I mean, we do that with race cars as well. And that would take substantially more money and time, but we do that anyway. And I think it's a good concept for a show that that does resonate with most people. Because everybody thinks they can unfuck other people's problems, which is almost never true, but that's okay.
Yeah, I should like just say this right out of the bat, that none of the cars that we worked on probably gained any value from after we fixed them. Like when you're trying to, like you got the, I'm thinking of like the picture of like reliable, cost, and like fast, like all of that goes out the window when you're trying to get something done in like 5 days. When we're working with vendors that have probably never had a relationship with Motor Trend, we get very little on the house, if you want to call it that. So it was kind of absurd, some of the like level of money that got put into these vehicles. And somewhat, I don't want to say how poorly we actually executed some of the modifications. So overall, some of the cars I would probably not even want to sell for the fear of being sued by the next owner.
You said it's like a 5-day turnaround, though?
It's a legitimate 5 days, I would say. Some of the builds for example, some of them we hit some roadblocks. I think most of them we hit roadblocks. And we, for various reasons, we got an additional day here or there to actually fix them. Or my shop, 10 Tenths, we were contracted to do some of the heavy lifting because some of the projects were pretty bad in certain cases. Sure. But the episode 6, the Skyline one, was one of my, probably my close second, if not one of my most fun episodes I've ever done. Because that one, we had so many ridiculous problems and we had no more time to work on it. So the fixes were kind of ridiculous. We were just like, oh, do we really need that? Just take it off and get rid of it and we'll, you know, figure something out. But we actually start to finish did that entire episode in, I want to say it was 6 days or so. And if you haven't watched it, we picked it up in, I don't remember exactly what the town was, Colorado, Northwest Colorado, and then drove to Albuquerque to fix it and then went back up to Durango to actually partake in a drifting event that we kind of created.
Yeah, that's wild. That the everything sounded great about the show until you said 5 or 6 days, and I would not want to be thrashing on a car. It comes back to like what Mike says, you know, you get this, you want everything perfect situation, and that's just not realistic when you're working with a production crew, I guess.
Yeah. It was one of the hard
5 days. How do you even do
you
that?
You guys went it perfect.
It was one of the things we had to, it was a hard thing to overcome, actually. Like it was because I consider myself a professional and, you know, I like to do things and execute them well. And our other host, Aaron, is known for having top notch, like motorsport spec wiring systems. And, you know, we're taking this harness that was pulled out of a, you know, a Chevy 1500 truck and put it in this car and it has so many open circuits. It's like, can we just get it to work? So it was a big thing to overcome for every one of the hosts about what is obtainable and what is acceptable. And that was a challenge.
Like on a car like an R32, right? That, I mean, it's obviously not native to this land. I don't know why I said it that way. Anyway.
Kind of weird.
Technically a foreigner.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an invader to our land. But there's no parts. So like if you have to fix it, like, you kind of give us a, like, if anything is even remotely more in depth that needs to be fixed, it's not like that Fox body. It's not like a, you know, Cavalier. It's not like something that you can get parts for off of Rock Auto or something like that. So it's hard for me to fathom how that's possible to buy a car, fix some things in 5 days, unless they're like, keep all the parts the same and just fix someone's, you know, messed up wiring or fix someone's messed up exhaust or fix someone's messed up, you know, they didn't install the suspension right, but all the parts are there. You kind of get what I'm saying? Like, how does that even work?
That's, you know, you're absolutely true. And that's still something that every one of us is conscious of. And the fact that that particular car lasted as long as it did and the fixes that we had and created. In fact, the R32 specifically, like I kind of need to take a step back because what is on the episode is no joke. Maybe 50% of the problems we actually had during that show. If we would have put every problem that we had and how we overcome it, people wouldn't have believed it. It would have been, people would have thought it was completely scripted. So things like an example, we had a problem where we fixed the car for like the fourth time and we were driving down the road doing a test drive in it. And for whatever reason, the starter decided just to slam to the on position as we're driving down the road and started making this ungodly noise. And
that sounds perfect.
I thought for sure.
That sounds like a perfect car.
Yeah. I thought for sure the clutch that we had just installed in it was getting ready to shit the bed and just fly right through my legs. So in the episode, you literally see me driving with my, not driving, sitting in the passenger seat with my knees at my chest, just for dear life. But we got back to the shop and the car died because the starter overloaded and blew the main fuse. And the fuse was a massive fuse from the 90s where we couldn't find it anywhere. Aaron, being the electrical genius he was, modified like some 120 amp maxi fuse and was able to shoehorn it into the spot. And we just took the starter out of the car and we had to push start the car every time after that. So yeah, because you're not going to get a starter. You're not going to get any of that.
Yeah.
And we knew it was a kind of a ticking time bomb, but I think that's what made that car so beautiful was that we put it through its paces. We drove it across state lines, and that was all 100% unscripted. It was real. And I had a little bit of a love for RBs after that, man. It was kind of cool.
Oh boy. Take that back.
It's perfect.
Yeah. Take that back right now. We were having a good time and look what you done did.
That's where like you get a starter. You got to find the good old boy, like the people who rewind starters, you know, if they're in town, right? Find that dude and be like, here you go. And he's like, yeah, I'll have it back this afternoon because I got, you know, nobody wants their starters rewound anymore. And I'm just holding out here and smoking and doing nothing. So
yeah, it was pretty terrifying. And then of course it had a welded diff. So when we sent out to go do that test drive, we just have GoPros. So the film crew doesn't follow us on every test drive. So when it broke down in the intersection, it was just me and Aaron having to push this broken down car, you know, with a welded diff and do a U-turn in the middle of traffic. So that was real fun. And that was all for safety purposes, probably not put in the show. But
yeah, that sounds terrible.
Yeah. The car, it made us work enough to where it was a struggle. But when it was done, we had so much fun with it that I think every one of us, we had a newfound passion for the RBs.
Abusive relationship. I get it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there is that Stockholm syndrome, and you should watch out for that. in case we needed a, you know, a clinical definition of what happened to you.
I had a reality check. Dan has an RB26, and like 3 months after the shows were done, Aaron has just spun a bearing for no reason. So yeah.
Put it back in its place. That's good.
It was a reality check. Reality check.
Just resetting all of that, making sure everybody knows what's up, you know.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, like that's insane. Cause like the Fox body in 5 days I get, but the RB, yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me. Go ahead, Dan.
I was just wondering, do you have a long-term project car that you personally have that isn't a 5 day turnaround?
Dude, I have, if my wife is listening, I do not have any long-term, but truth be told, I have way too many. I think one of the reasons why I had the opportunity to be on Motor Trend Show is that I actually am a real kind of car fanatic, right? I do what I do for a living because I enjoy it. It's again, something about torture, I guess, just, you know, makes me happy. But overall, I have probably three or four long-term projects that are going on and one or two that are kind of in the works. So I told myself I would not start another one until I finish these other ones. So yeah, I got quite a few. Mostly I try to stick to a handful of rules of this car has to have a purpose. And that's really why I think this show means a lot to me is that, you know, these cars are not just, you know, we're not just restoring cars just for the sake of putting them back on the road, but like we want to try and accomplish something with them, whether it's, you know, autocross as lame as that is or time attack. So I have a time attack car that I hope, and I've always wanted to do grid life with it, but it's always been, I've gotten it to a point to where I'm happy with it. And then one little thing needs improvement. And then from there, I kind of relook at it. And that was my first car that I actually bought exclusively for motorsport stuff, which was my BRZ. So I have it's a 2013 Subaru BRZ. And I used that exclusively as autocross for about 3 or 4 years. And then I kind of got tired of that like lame rule book and decided to LS swap it. And then from there I have just a handful of other ones, but probably the more interesting was that my first car that I kind of fell in love with was the 3000 GT VR4. And when I was in high school, my father helped me buy my first one and I was super stoked about it. I didn't know anything about cars at the time other than what Gran Turismo had taught me. So I knew that car was awesome. I didn't know that it was a naturally aspirated front wheel drive, but nonetheless, it was my first sports car. I sold it in like 2008 to buy my first house. And then 2 years ago, I found it for sale, oddly enough, Facebook Marketplace, and it wasn't running and it had hail damage and it was just like totally destroyed. And I drove up to Santa Fe, which is just like an hour away from where we are here. And the kid who was selling it had all the paperwork and documents from when I bought the car a long time ago and all the parts that were on it, like my lightweight flywheel. And like I had converted it to a VR4 engine, but still the front wheel drive transmission. So he handed me this paper of like this notebook that I had put together with all the receipts and documents. And it was my name and he had no idea, but I bought it back. And oddly enough, I bought it back for less than I sold it. So that's a win. That's a win for me.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. With hail damage.
Yeah. Right. And people are going to get a little angry about this, but when I was, I was a tweaker, I'll call it that, like a tinkerer on electrical stuff. I'm pretty good, but probably good enough to be reckless, but not good enough to be a professional at wiring. So I had converted my 3000 GT to push button start. And at that time, I did it with all things you could find on eBay. So the push button that was a start on it that lit up with a backlight, that was all purchased via eBay. And it was all junk. And I wired it together with like no fuses and just relays that like relay after relay after relay. And to make like the accessories and ignition work. And at the time, I was one of those guys that just bought one color wire. You know, I was like, I don't need black or red. Just buy red. Everything's red.
Hurts me so bad.
Yeah. But the real kicker with it is that what had failed and what had made the car bounce between four different owners before I finally bought it back was my janky push button start. And the moment I got it back to the shop, the poor kid was texting me. And he was like, yeah, man, good luck with it. And I had gotten it running within 30 minutes. And I knew exactly what was broken because I was the one that put that crappy installed component there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
you were ensuring it would fail so you could buy it back. That's all. It was a plan.
I don't want to give anyone any ideas, but that seemed to work well in my favor. And what goes around comes around because that's pretty much what we run into when it comes to runs good. Just stuff like that.
So, I mean, that's a good plan. That's impressive.
Not bad.
And coming from the 3000 GT world, now it makes sense why you can do a show where you thrash on something for 5 days, because working on a 3000 GT is nothing but pain constantly. Mm-hmm. They're just too tight, too small, too much crap, and too advanced and too old.
Yeah. I think that's kind of why I can still maintain some sanity in this industry, is because I did start my automotive career trying to keep my 3000 GT alive.
You started by getting kicked in the face. I mean, it makes sense.
Pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's better from there.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of the Subaru people, right? So
yes.
Well, I wouldn't degrade him like that. Let's not go that far.
Yeah.
Subaru people are just, yeah.
So is that, know. Out of all your projects, that's your favorite? If any car that you've got, what's your favorite?
I'd have to say that my BRZ is by far my favorite. Mostly because it's the one I put the most money into. It's the one that
I'm
the most terrified after driving. And, you know, it's the one that I will probably wreck that car someday, realistically, because
I'm going to lose a leg in that car. But who are we? What is this even about?
So jeez. I respect it a lot. I think it's something that I spent the most time with. I'm most proud of it as far as the things that we've done with it. And like the outcome. So I really like that car a lot, but it's also so valuable that in the back of my mind, actually, it's probably not that valuable, but I've just sunk so much money into it that in the back of my mind, I'm like, yeah, this is like one bad decision away from just being a junkyard like car. So,
I mean, yeah, that's anything in racing, yeah. Unfortunately, right?
Yeah. But I would say my favorite car, the one that if I had to like only drive one car a weekend, it would be my drift car, which would be I think it's a 2006 350Z, Nissan 350Z. So it's, at first, when I embarked down the road of wanting to learn how to drift, everyone pointed to the 350Z, and this was before, it's funny to say that they've even gained value, but it's back when they were really an affordable entry-level drift car. And it's taught me a lot. I've probably progressed the most as a driver because of it. And then it's just kind of amazing when I sit back and look at how much I can destroy and beat on it, and it still just start the next day for me. So I have a special place in my heart for that car, but it's probably the one that if I had to drive one last time, it would be that one.
What engine?
So in 06, the VQ had a rev up edition, which was only available in 2006, which is not particularly appealing by itself at all. It's not the HR. It's slightly better in the DE, but everything about it is more expensive because it's a 1 year production car by itself. So if you have a motor failure, which can be common, you have to find an 06. And because of that, it's the most expensive VQ that you can likely find. But what makes it, I think the redeeming value of it is that, you know, I threw a Vortex supercharger on it and it makes 500 to the wheels now, and it's stock bottom end, and yeah, it's super fun. So that's where I think the car really won my heart over, despite the terrible trumpet noises that it makes.
I was about to say, do you like the way it sounds?
No, definitely not. But But I don't think you're going to find too many videos. Not many people actually modify the exhausts completely on those cars because it can be really expensive to get a quality set of headers for them. But there's a handful of companies out there that make equal length long tube headers, and it does drastically change the way they sound. So I will bet someone, I'll even say this, if you guys shoot me a message on Instagram about like just a video recording of your 350Z and I'll send you one of mine. If you don't like it, you know, take this bet, I'll give you $100 because it sounds particularly good. Doesn't sound like a VQ at all. It sounds more 2J-ish, if anything.
Well, now we got to hear this thing. So we're going to have to figure out a way to get that posted. So we'll get a clip of your car sounding unlike
garbage can.
Babbling.
Yes. Yes.
A babbling goat, whatever we want to say the standard 350Z sound like the VQs, because they're terrible.
Absolutely.
There's like five people who like it, and it just and the five people who do like it that I'm thinking about right now, I'm sorry guys, I just don't really respect your opinions. So so I hope it's better than that.
Yeah. I can't believe you care about the sound. Those engines just, like Shay says, they just work. So I have no problem with them at all. Yeah.
There's very few things that I don't like the sound. It's that mm-hmm. and like old Chevy 350 trucks that sound like popcorn. Those are the two things that I just call them, popcorn engines, because everyone takes like a 350 and like cuts off the entire exhaust.
Yeah.
And it's just so loud and annoying. Like I hate those two things. I hate.
Yeah. They all
I don't even hate Subarus as much.
Yeah. They all love their 500 horsepower small block.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they say they're 500 horsepower.
500 horsepower, 300 shot of nitrous. They're
383s that make 250 right. horsepower and 315 pound feet of torque. And they're amazing through that four speed. And okay, we're done here.
Right. All right. Exactly.
Guys. Getting all riled up again.
No, this 15 second car I've ever seen. Oof.
Yep.
15 second. Are you kidding? They're like 19 second cars. Civic SIs are faster. Get out of here.
I kind of have a chip on my shoulder for the VQ because I didn't buy it because I liked anything about it, really. In fact, I bought it because I didn't like anything about it. Because I feel like liking the car in a drifting perspective will inhibit your driving ability, the progression. Because you have to, for the lack of better words, you have to beat on these cars. Like some of these cars, especially some of the early model 350Zs, you're clutch kicking the car through the entire turn. Like you look at some of these videos and these kids are clutch kicking them continuously through the entire drift. So you have to not really care about these cars. But when you maintain them well, they're just fantastic. And that's kind of what I've just grown so much respect for that engine. And secretly, I've fell in love with it. So it is the issues and shortcomings that they have is purely mostly self-inflicted. People not knowing how to read the oil dipstick properly So not going to go down the road too much, but the VQ has an interesting way of reading oil. The one of the drain back orifices in the cylinder head to the bottom end is the same port that the dipstick goes down. So if you shut the car off and you go and read the oil, you're going to have a slow drip of oil from the cylinder head dripping on the dipstick the entire time. So they'll pull the dipstick out and it'll be covered in oil and they'll be like, oh, I must have plenty of oil. And a lot of these VQs have 150,000 miles on them. So people are running slightly thicker oil than what they should. And that just exacerbates the whole issue. So you have to wait. Even the manual says to let the car warm up and then check the oil in like 5 minutes. I don't do that. I just check the oil when it's cold because I know there's no oil in the cylinder head. And as long as it's at full there, I've never had a problem. But we've had so many engine failures because people come to us and they're like, yeah, the oil's fine. And they pull the dipstick out and it looks fine. And you drain it and like a quart and a half comes out. So the biggest drawback of the VQ and the 350Zs is not that the engine's poorly designed. It's just that, well, actually, the drain system is actually poorly designed. It's difficult to read. And a lot of people, yeah, it's not necessarily their fault, but yeah, it's one of the shortcomings. Like their
fault. Kind of sort of sounds like their fault. I mean, we can say it.
I'm always five quarts full. Five quarts full. That doesn't drain some more oil out.
That doesn't sound overly complicated. That just sounds stupid. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yes, yeah. I understand that it's slightly harder to understand what's happening to the dipstick, but you just explained it to me. So now I can just very easily go check the oil on any VQ right now. No problem.
Yeah, I heard what you're saying, but fuck that. You know what I mean?
But fuck you. And I'm going to check my oil by pouring oil on the dipstick when I take it out and then reading it. Yeah. Like what? Yeah.
So a lot of these kids are out there running like 50 weight oil because they're holy clapped out DE motors. And yeah, they think they're full of oil when really they're probably three quarts low. So 350Z owners, go check your oil right now.
Well, I'm excited to hear a good sounding VQ so then I can, like, not hate on it so much, but we'll see.
See, this is exciting.
I'm not even kidding. I think it's probably my best sounding car that I have.
Holy. So all right, yeah, we went from not shit to best sounding in the course of 10 minutes. So this is getting aggressive.
I don't want to overstep it too much.
You're too fucking late there, bud.
It's too late. Yeah. Holy yeah. crap!
We went from 10 Formula One cars to shame.
No. Goddamn fire jet.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I won't even shade. I won't even kid it anymore. It's actually pretty awesome.
There you go. Like that. Yeah. That's some confidence. Now we need a rev off. Like we're gonna have some grid life rev off for Rob Dom and.
So. I did actually put an AEM in it finally. And I was never like a person to just sit there and stand on the two-step, but I kind of am now. Like, it's pretty ridiculous.
Oh, God. Well, this is a great episode. Signing off now.
Yep. And on that note.
Terrible news. All right. Well, we are actually pretty close to that time. So
yeah, it's been an hour.
Yeah, it has been an hour. So where can shout out who you want to shout out? Programs you want to shout out, how they see the show, all that stuff. What should we look forward to? All that stuff.
As far as Runs Good stuff goes, I think that the show is going to be available free now through a handful of, I don't know the great details of it, but it should be on Amazon and a lot of free to watch, like I think on Roku TV and stuff like that. Episode 6 is actually on Motor Trend's YouTube channel. So I think as far as your audience is concerned, it's one of the better, more entertaining episodes, and it's absolutely free. Not many people, I think, watch it because they don't really know that it's there. So if you go to YouTube, look under Motor Trend TV, episode 6 is there. If you just look up Runs Good Skyline, I think you could probably find it there. But I would say check it out. And if you like what you see, definitely, you know, search other ways to, if you have to pay Motor Trend to see the other ones, that's great. If not, there's a lot of other ways you can watch the other episodes, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm thinking it says on Amazon it's on free trial right now. So go watch that shit.
Yeah, it's pretty entertaining. Some more than others. Yeah, fuck good stuff.
Well, if I go watch some, we might be able to have another conversation about how much I hate things. But we'll see.
Oh, God, yeah. Mike, that's feeling confident.
Well, what I'm just saying, like the I'm not saying what they do. I'm saying what
people do in general. Because
what people do in general. No, I'm not shitting on him. He's got to deal with other people's garbage. And so like, I want to see what other, I'm going to go check out what other people's garbage looks like and then be like, that is the cringiest shit I've ever seen. I've always wanted to, like, you know, understand more when people are fixing things. I know that, you know, especially on a time crunch, people don't do their best. And like you said, you want to do better, you know, especially at your shop. I'm sure you do far better. And everybody does far better when they've got that time. But it's just like, yeah, holy shit. Some things are just blow my mind.
Yeah. It's kind of silly to think that some of these cars were like on the road next to you driving, because a lot of them are pretty unsafe in general.
No, pretty classy. Yeah,
just trying not to think about that part.
Entirely different conversation. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. On the other side, I look to hopefully, you know, meet some of you guys at some of the Grid Life events. It's something I finally like want to get to, and my BRZ is finally getting there. So hope to see you guys.
You plan to come out to some?
Yeah, absolutely. I really hope to this year. I had a slight minor setback where I had to rebuild my LS engine, but beyond that, yeah, I should be able to make it to some events this year.
LS be LS, and you know what I mean?
Exactly, man.
are you going to try to hit West Coast primarily, or are you going to come out this way?
I think, I mean, I have like everything I need in order to travel and race the car. I just don't have a lot of the time. So I think there was some unfortunate stuff that happened with the Pikes Peak event. I don't know if that's still there anymore, correct?
It is not on the schedule.
Yeah. So I think I just have no choice. I have to go. And I have a lot of friends out there that I've raced with in the SCCA. So it's, you know, while it's a large drive, it's not all wasted. Plus it would be fun to actually get involved in some competitive time attack stuff.
Plus we talked about it. You can just go ahead, bring the car over, stay in the garage as long as you need to.
Okay. I'll move in, dude. Don't even promise.
I'll move in.
Yeah. I got so much stuff to do.
All right. So obviously, you mentioned that you got your own shop. Where can people reach you if they want to reach you, if they need some stuff done otherwise? That's kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm kind of a terrible salesman when it comes to that stuff, but we have an Instagram. I'm walking
through it. It's okay.
I appreciate it. Yeah. 1010smotorsports.com is our website. And then you can find a lot of links to our social media, 1010s on Instagram. I think we have a TikTok. I don't think we have anything on it.
So. All right.
It's true.
And what kind of work do you do? What can people reach out to you for? What's your bread and butter?
Working on 90s shit boxes is our bread and butter, I would say.
Fair.
No, all right. That's a lot of our listeners.
Yeah. We actually have a pretty talented, amazing team. So we do all manners of motor swaps, engine management systems, mostly motorsports related stuff. And I do a lot of the suspension focused things. So like corner balancing, custom alignments. We have a guy that's pretty fantastic when it comes to fabrication these days. So yeah, we're kind of a full-fledged performance shop. So if you have a project car that you want to gear towards a particular type of motorsport, then we're pretty well balanced, except for drag racing. We don't know much about that.
Proven in episode one.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, it was good to have you on the show. People reach out to Shay if they need anything, obviously, in the Albuquerque area, right? And then, it was good to have you on. We appreciate some of the background in terms of, you know, having a show, what it's like, and unfucking shit in 5 days. Fantastic.
Yep. I guess that could be my specialty on my grave when I die.
Unfucking shit.
Yeah.
The 5 day unfucker.
Psst. It's that time again, boys. I need those goddamn reviews. You can say that Devin is forcing you to do them. Or you can leave some genuine feedback, and I'll be sure to read them and get them back to the boys. In the meantime, you can join our Facebook group, which is Professional Awesome Technical Forum. You can follow us on Instagram at Professional Awesome Racing, and we have a Facebook regular page with the same name. But until then, we'll talk to you later, and we really appreciate you listening.